Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, I don't know if this is a first or not, but we've got Josh Bone, Matt Levin, Nick Lopez, and John Tokok all joining us today from Indianapolis. They're in a kind of a makeshift TV studio. It's kind of cool. We're talking about why you should make sure you're upgrading your infrastructure, why it's worthwhile, why financially it just makes sense to do it. That's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack here in the Telos Alliance Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. So glad that you're here with us. It's been a beautiful day here in Nashville. Chris Tarr, unfortunately, is not with us today. He had an emergency run to go take care of a transmitter site. Part of the life of being a broadcast engineer, especially like Chris, with about 50 transmitter sites he takes care of. Anyway, we've got a great show put together for you, thanks to my guest and his colleagues. So let's check them out. We're going to go to Indianapolis to a TV studio, kind of a makeshift little TV studio, where we have Josh Bone, Matt Levin, and also John Tokok, and I think Nick Lopez is going to join us as well. Gentlemen, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. Good to see you.
Hi, Kirk. How are you?
Oh, we're good. Look at you guys. Oh, my goodness. Where's Nick Lopez? I was promised Nick Lopez.
Oh, he's in the control room right now.
Yeah. He's okay. Running the audio.
he's in the on-deck circle. Okay.
Oh, wow.
That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt.
All right, from on your radio dial from left to right, we've got dressed in the red uniform today, Josh Bone, head of Max Connect, formerly Max Connect Wireless, now Max Connect Group. Max, Max, Josh, welcome into the show. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Kirk.
And next to Matt, in the middle of your radio dial, is Matt Levin. Matt, hey, good to see you, man. Haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, glad you're here. And finally, one of the spokespeople for Max Connect Wireless, John Tokok, is here. John, am I saying your name right?
Yeah, you're close enough.
Tokok. Sure.
Close enough?
It doesn't matter. You're close enough. Anything close and I turn around, so.
Hey, I don't know if it's possible to get John's mic a little closer to him or something, but when I hear John, I'm just pretty much hearing him from the other mics, I think. I'm not sure. But we did a mic check earlier, and I heard him tapping his mic, so I'm not sure what that deal is. Hey, it's we're gonna talk with Josh, Matt, and John about some projects that are going on, and also about the whole concept of hey, if you've got a 20, 25, 30-year-old broadcast facility. Josh was telling me about a station that is using a 50-year-old console, and you know, there's going to come a time when that's going to die for the last time. That there are some technologies now that are really worth getting into, and so we're going to talk about those kind of things coming up here in just a minute. In fact, Josh, why don't you give me a little preview of a couple of the ideas that you're going to be passing along to our listeners and viewers today? What's on your mind?
Well, we're at a point in the broadcast industry that engineering isn't always available in-house. You know, we've been talking for years about the shortage with engineers in the industry, and we've kind of hit that point where it's hard to find a staff engineer or a full-time chief engineer. And firms like ours, and you know, there's a lot of other quality firms out there as well, you know, getting someone else in to help you, even just with projects, it's definitely worth doing now rather than trying to get through it yourself while you're trying to maintain 4 transmitter sites and 10 studios and whatever else there is. You know, it's this is very clearly not what it used to be. So, you know, there's lots of different little things that you can do to kind of save time and save money. And what used to might require a full studio on its own, maybe it doesn't anymore. Maybe it doesn't even require a studio, depending on what it is. Plus all the other different things that you can do with what's already available, what's out there as far as, you know, our wireless product and some other products that we've got coming out, the U192, stuff like that. So yeah, lots of good stuff.
I think we're also going to end up touching on how, if you've got some IT talent, either on staff or available to you as a station owner, station manager, or as an engineer who's just spread too thin, maybe that IT talent can get a few things done these days as well, since so many of our technologies are moving in that direction. Hey, we're going to hear real quick about Nautel. We're going to come back with Josh Bone, Matt Levin, and John Tocock, and maybe Nick Lopez will be making an appearance if he can make the audio run itself for a few minutes. Our show is brought to you in part by Nautel. And at Nautel, you know, they do these Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtables. We don't have one scheduled for a few weeks now, but there's always this page. There's no way that you've been to all of them or even very many of them, but they have them all archived here at Nautel.com. And then just click on the link to get yourself to webinars, Transmission Talk Tuesday, and the archive of all of these. And there's a whole, they're all archived right here, video and notes as well. So you can check these out, catch up on like the two most recent ones about air handling and cooling at transmitter sites, plus antennas, lines, and combiners. You can see if you just missed, you know, these last two that were in October of 2023, you can catch up on those right there, plus all the other previous ones as well. And while we're here talking about Nautel, I want to mention that Nautel, if you're thinking about going HD radio on your FM station, and plenty of FMs have been doing this lately, including one of my stations, and we're going to do another station in the next few weeks or months. One of our FMs out in Samoa, because we're going to feed a translator with an HD2. Nautel gives you the technology to be able to do this and turn it up, and it's really, really pretty easy. I was really impressed with how this went for me. It was my first real HD installation, and we used the Nautel HD Multicast Plus box. Well, Nautel has a lot of resources right there on their website to help you get going with HD radio if you haven't done this before, or if you have done it before and you remember, hey, I put in some, you know, Generation 1 or Gen 2 product and it was such a hassle. Well, Nautel has made this a whole lot easier by putting so much of the HD technology into one box. And that's the Nautel Multicast Plus box. It is it's a real help. All or most everything you need is right there in one user interface. And it takes a little getting used to. I had to get a little help from my friends in getting mine set up. But overall, man, it was pretty easy. A few cables, IP addresses were already set on the equipment. And we got the station logos on the air. We got HD1, HD2, and HD3 on the air. And I was just really overall totally impressed with how that works. So check it out from Nautel, Nautel.com. And you can check out you know, the HD, the FM, the AM things, and all the helpful information they give you at Nautel.com. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. Chris Tarr is off on an emergency run right now. So we're talking with Josh Bone, John Tocock, and Matt Levin. So Josh, all right, yeah, I don't know how you want to lead this off. You and I were talking last night, actually. You were driving, well, and we thought, hey.
Indianapolis. Absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the ideas that we talked about, you're doing some projects, maybe you'd like to fill us in on them, but, and you've already kind of filled us in on the notion of now with where we are in technology, we've turned a good corner. I feel like where if you're going to improve studios and transmitter sites, it's a good time to do that. I think we've reached a nice settling in point in modern technology, recent technology. It's going to last us for a while. Do you want to riff on that idea for a minute?
Well, I mean, there's never a bad time to update. Oh, by the way, Nick Lopez is here. Everybody, Nick Lopez.
Oh, there's Nick. Hey, Nick.
So John had to run out. He had an emergency as well. His daughter's finished with cheer practice. So, but no, I mean, there's never a bad time to upgrade your equipment. There's never a bad time to improve your facility. It's just getting the, you know, a lot of equipment, especially in the stations that we've encountered, a lot of equipment is hitting that 30 plus year lifespan, and it's getting harder to maintain. You know, the, I won't even say planned obsolescence. It's not cell phones or computers, but, you know, transmitters. When you get into some of these older transmitters, you know, whether it's an older tube rig or even a first gen solid state rig, the parts to maintain them just aren't there. But, you know, with what's out there as far as modern technology for transmitters, you know, you, whether it's Nautel or Gates or any of the other brands, they've all proven to be reliable. They've all had proven success over the years. So not to mention the monetary return that you get solely from the energy savings. I mean, when you're talking about a grounded grid transmitter or something like that, where the efficiency is down, you know, below 50%, well, you can get 25% more efficiency out of a solid state box. And depending on the power level, you might be able to fit it in 3 rack units.
Yeah.
You don't need a full refrigerator size cabinet for 3 kilowatts anymore. I mean, you know, I had CCAs, and you know what? CCAs ran like a top. And whenever I could run down to my local parts store and buy 99% of what was in that, that was great. But the days of local parts stores and wanting to run a grounded grid tube transmitter have both passed. So it doesn't make sense to try to keep a lot of this old stuff alive. And, you know, kudos to folks that are able to do it. I can still do it. And there's a few other folks that can do it. I think these guys probably can too. Doesn't mean you want to. And it's not doing the customer any type of valuable service to try to keep this old stuff alive. I tell people all the time, I would much rather they spend money on infrastructure than spend money on maintenance calls for us to come and keep kludging their old stuff back together. Buy a new one so you never have to call me to come and worry about it again. And we come and periodically check on it and clean the air filters and take the readings and go home.
You know, you bring up some great points, and I was just thinking about my own operations where we have been able to replace, except for one FM transmitter, we've been able to replace all of our transmitters with solid state units over time. And I'm talking about Delta Radio and our station in Hawaii and in Samoa. And we're not rich. My business partner, Larry Fuss, does a great job of, you know, spending money where it's absolutely needed to be spent so that we end up lowering our costs. And I got to tell you, since we have put in a combination of Nautel solid state transmitters and a few of the Elanos solid state transmitters, I know that our power bills are less. Certainly our air conditioning is breathing much easier. And my friend Russ Lafferty has probably fixed a couple things, but for the most part, these things haven't failed. So is that what you're finding, that these transmitters, even a solid state that may be 5, 8, 10 years old, they tend to be pretty darn reliable if you keep them clean?
Well, and that's the big thing. You got to keep them clean. You got to keep them cool. I've told people that for years. A clean, cold transmitter is a happy transmitter. And, you know, what's the enemy of electronics? Heat. Well, and water, but we won't talk about that. That's the same thing. And, you know, Matt's done some transmitter installs with us. I know Nick's done some transmitter installs in the not too far back, you know, and it's just, it makes such a difference to be able to pull out an old tube rig that would heat up your entire room. You might need 15 tons of air conditioning, and, you know, you've got the same solid state rig and you can operate with 5, and the heat load goes down, the noise level goes down. It's huge.
Let me ask you about something that we've had a little bit of trouble with in the last 5 years, and that is damage to the things that are outside the transmitter building, like up on the tower. And specifically, I'm talking about damage from projectiles that are shot at our coax and antennas. Have you had that kind of problem?
Yes. that's about all I got. Yeah. It's, you know, somebody, Bubba comes out and he goes, "Oh, I'm going to shoot at that red thing up there." And it's game over, and it's a couple $1,000s. And when they miss and hit the big black thing and put a hole through it, that's a whole different mess.
Yeah.
Especially when it flames up.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, and I don't want to draw any conclusions or paint with a broad brush, but it seems like maybe during COVID, Bubba got bored and you know, sat on his back porch with his 30-06 and, or maybe his AR-15 or, and decided to, yeah, and a PBR, yeah, and did some practice. We did have, some things were not gunshot. They were maybe a bad installation to begin with, or vibrating coax, wearing something out. But yeah, I was just wondering if, we've solved by replacing transmitters with something newer and solid state, we've largely solved a lot of the headache and repetitive maintenance on tube type transmitters, which blow tons of air and make a lot of heat, and they're going to require more maintenance. Solid state ones, as you said, just change the air filters, keep the building a little bit cool, which you can more afford to do. But now the problems have moved to the outside. that was my observation.
Well, and the problems on the outside have always been there to a point. It's just a matter of, now that we're not constantly running in circles on the inside, you take more notice of, that doesn't quite look right when your STL dish is hanging like this. That's just kind of where it's at. And it comes down to it comes back to the concept of those things happen more and go more unnoticed, because if you can't afford to have or can't find a full-time engineer, or maybe both, if you don't have anybody visiting that site regularly, bad things happen. People notice that. If your site is somewhere that passes homes or camps, and the people that are regularly in those homes and camps or whatever notice, well, nobody ever goes up that road, and maybe they like to do nefarious things, and nobody's passed going up there for 3 months. Well, I'm going to go up and see what I can find. And that's how ground systems get stolen, and that's how doors get kicked open, and sites get robbed, and copper gets ripped off, and stuff like that. You've got to have a presence at those sites. You got to keep the grass cut. You've got to keep the weeds mowed. You got to make sure your exterior lighting works. Things like that. You've got that AM site that people like to bother. Tell them about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've got thanks to suburban sprawl, most of our sites now are in pretty residential areas, but we do have one that's kind of in the middle of an industrial area, but it's got a lot of green space and even a little retention pond. So a lot of the locals treat it as kind of their local park. And because there's not a lot of people around, we've found some bullet holes.
Yeah.
So, and other things. So,
I know the cops have been out there more than once.
So, as we move through the show, there's a couple more things I want to make sure we cover. One of those, and I want to get some of Matt's thoughts about this, and that has to do with audio processing and some of the new ways that people are finding to do that with some software, and how to make that reliable. But before we take we're going to head into a commercial break shortly. But before we do, Josh, you mentioned STLs, like you go to the site and find your STL antenna hanging kind of squeewad. But that reminds me that, there are so many different types of STL methodologies that we have now, whether it's IP radios. I'm using those at a number of sites with really good effect, and they're so cheap, you can do two of them. Also, internet delivery, with wired internet or even 5G internet as a backup. But there's also still some 950 options. Josh, if you would, just take a couple minutes and kind of run through the options that you see at sites that you're taking care of.
Yes, all of those things. the internet is becoming the most prevalent way to deliver audio that I've seen. 950 is still there. I walking through the Radio 1 facilities here, they've still got lots of 950. There's still Starlinks in service, but they've also got fiber to all their transmitter sites, and they're running different types of codecs, whether it's, Intraplex IPLs or tie lines or brick links, or what am I missing? Is that all of them?
I think it's most of them now. Okay. Yeah. It seems like we're changing it all the time, but
yeah, exactly. And then, like you said, there's the wireless stuff, like our Max Connect wireless product that, Radio 1 uses, usually connected to their brick links as backups to all their sites company wide. And we've got, over 1,000 other customers across the country that are doing the same thing. the ways to transport audio now are just so almost infinite, because you can use something as, you know, as basic as, you know, put a computer out there and pick up your stream. If you've got no other way to get there, you have an STL failure, you've got no other way to get audio there, you can put a computer at your site and pick up a stream. You can put in a set of ubiquities on an unlicensed frequency if your spectrum's clear enough. You can put in a licensed, you know, radio from Cambium or one of the plethora of other licensed radio manufacturers. And if you're going across the street, you can use 60 gigahertz. If you're going 25 miles, you can use 6 gigahertz and multiple different spectrum allocations in between. There are so many different ways to get audio to your site. It's just a matter of, what are you trying to do ultimately? Are you just trying to deliver audio? Are you trying to deliver metadata? Are you trying to deliver HD data? You know, if you're just trying to deliver audio and you've got a 950 path, that is still by far the most reliable and robust way to do it, because you've got control over it. It's a point-to-point licensed path. And, you know, there's analog STL options out there. We have a new one that we're about to release that's a 950 licensed STL. It's frequency agile. It's 20 watts. And it's got web interfaces on both ends. So it's got SNMP in it. So it'll alert you if there's silence. It'll alert you if the carrier goes off. It'll alert you if the receiver squelches. You know, there are, you know, still plenty of other options. You know, Armstrong still sells the X-Link. Mosley still sells the Starlink. Then, you know, getting into the IP codecs. Well, you can do that if you've got internet. And if you've got internet, then you can get RDS data out there. You can get, you know, transmitter control data out there, all that stuff. So, you know, and if you've got, you know, point-to-point IP radio wireless, then you can do whatever you want. Because at that point, it's, and I tell people this that don't understand it, I'm like, it's like stringing a big, long network cable out to your transmitter site. And at that point, it's on your network. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
The flexibility is there. You can do micro MPX. You can do that out of a, you know, plethora of different processors now, from Orban to Omnia to ST Extreme, Stereo Tool. They'll encode micro MPX. All you have to do is decode it at the transmitter site end, and it hauls your entire composite signal out there over the internet, along with RDS and everything else. So the infinite possibilities of main and backup and secondary backup and tertiary backup, it's there. We're at a point now where, you know, engineers even 20 years ago couldn't have imagined. It was point to point 950 and T1, you know, 25 years ago, those were your options. And now if you're running a T1, ooh, you better have gold lined pockets, buddy, because that ain't cheap.
Nope. Speaking of gold lined pockets, we're going to line our pockets here with an advertiser message in just a second. We're talking to Josh Bone. Also, Matt Levin is there. We're going to speak to Matt about some audio processing shortly. And Nick Lopez is there. John Tocock had to go run, but that's the flexibility that we enjoy here. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, and I'm proud to have a sponsor that is, we're talking about technology. And now's a great time to make a move into some newer tech. Well, Broadcast Bionics has been working really hard on making virtualizing your broadcast infrastructure much easier. And that is with Virtual Rack. You can check it out at the Broadcast Bionics webpage. And here's the page about Virtual Rack. Now, of course, I work for Telos Alliance. And of course, Telos Alliance is you know, the main choice in there. There's different products from Telos Alliance that you can turn on and have operational inside your Virtual Rack. But there are two other companies that have virtualized products in there. Sound4 and 2WCOM also have different appliances that you can turn on and run inside the Broadcast Bionics Virtual Rack. This is like, it's like an app store for broadcast infrastructure. You get your Virtual Rack, and it's a server that is configured and sold by Broadcast Bionics. You get this server, you turn it on, and you get an interface where you choose the broadcast devices that you want. And that means you can put, for example, just click a link and you can get an Axia Altus audio console spun up in literally a few seconds. It will download the code and install it for you. The same thing with a Telos VX phone system, or with an Omnia Forza audio processor. Those are a few of the things that you can get turned on. Now, you still need to license these things through their respective manufacturers. So, you know, Axia or Telos or Sound4 or 2WCOM, you would still get them licensed through that. But most of these have a demo mode. You can at least make sure that they're working in this environment. And you also have opportunities to have high availability or at least backup with these apps, the way that Broadcastbonix has designed this. Now, I got to tell you, installing Docker containers on your own computer, it's perfectly doable, but it is a little complicated. It's not as easy as just installing an app if you're doing it yourself. And that's why Broadcastbonix has made this super easy. That's why they put a lot of effort into creating the environment where you can just turn these things on and they work. It's kind of the best of both worlds. You get the modern container-based software appliances to do radio things, and then you also get them easy to turn up and install. They're actually you got to get a demo. There's a couple of videos at the bottom of this page where you can go and watch. And there's some previous episodes of This Week in Radio Tech where Dan McQuillan, I think we had one earlier this year, it was probably in May or June of this year, where Dan McQuillan ran us through how this stuff works. It's really good technology from Broadcastbonix. And you've known them for years now as doing technology that makes running radio a lot easier and better and makes your content better. Check it out from Broadcast Bionics at bionic.radio or bionics.co.uk. Really appreciate their sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics. I'm Kirk Harnack here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. And coming to us from Indianapolis, I was not expecting. I talked to Josh last night. I said, Josh, hey, you should be on the show. We got some things to talk about. He said, sure, and I'll see if I can have some surprises. So here we are with the TV studio in Indianapolis with Matt. Sorry, what's that?
I said I'm good at surprising people.
Ah, yes. I was at your wedding, full of surprises.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we were shooting for.
Surprises, yes. I'm sure your bride says, "Hey, no surprises. Let's just have a wedding." Okay, so one of the modern technology options, you know, for years people would buy a box that did audio processing. And you can still do that. You can still, I mean, all the manufacturers still sell boxes that do audio processing with the, you know, XLR connectors on the back or maybe a BNC connector for FM composite. But now there are other options. One of those we've talked about on the show, a program like Omnia SST, which is an audio processor that runs in Windows. And there's the new Forza processor from Omnia. But Matt, you're involved with various different software-based audio processors. Tell me how people are responding to these and what your comfort level is with running an FM processor or an AM processor on essentially a computer.
Well, I mean, people's response, as I've talked to people, and it's mixed in the industry, it's still very mixed. I think the younger engineers like myself have no qualms about running processing on servers and computers and either via MicroMPX or to get it out to the transmitter side, or if you're just doing for streaming, you know, using Axia or Wheatnet to get it out of the processing engine into your encoders of choice. If you're using Telos, it's the X2 encoder. You know, some of the more seasoned engineers still are just kind of that, they like to have the box, they still prefer to have the box, and you know what, there's still lots of choices for that. But when you can take and do something like ST Enterprise or the Omnia 9S Enterprise and run high density multi-paths of processing on one server using Livewire or, you know, Wheatnet to get the audio in and out. And in the case of Stereotool Enterprise, even have multiple FMs being processed all on one server. And again, using MicroMPX to get that out to your transmitter site, it just, you can do a lot more with less financial outlay. So where each of those boxes, you're going to sink a pretty good chunk of change into those. You can buy the software at a much lower cost, put it on a server that you may already have. And then at that point, you're just, you know, either for streaming, getting it back into the encoders or getting a MicroMPX decoder for your transmitter sites.
Hey, I know you've got experience with micro MPX from several different manufacturers, and I had a really good experience. Now, I've used micro MPX on a couple of my own stations where traditional STLs were either difficult, not possible, or we were making changes. We needed some flexibility. I recently helped a station in Memphis, Tennessee, put in the micro MPX technology between, they really love their old Orbin 8100 processor that they have at the studio. And so, but they lost their double hop 950 STL, their hop point, they couldn't use it anymore. At least not for free. So, and it's a community station. So we ended up getting micro MPX through the the Omnia MPX nodes, one at the studio on the output of the Orbin, and one at the transmitter site, you know, feeding the FM exciter. Well, they had to get internet, and it turned out that their internet, Matt, was not as reliable as they were paying for. It's supposed to be a business class internet, but that they had been off for days at a time, with poor excuses from the internet supplier. And I won't name any Comcast names, but you know what I mean. It was bad. So what we ended up doing was, this is the beauty of IP. And is that we ended up getting, one of those T-Mobile business class, 5G gateways. And so from the studio end, from that encoder, we end up sending the micro MPX to two different public IP addresses. One of them is the Comcast address at the transmitter site. The other one is the T-Mobile public IP address at the transmitter site. And I mentioned it was a business class, so it does allow static IP addresses and port forwarding. So anyway, bottom line is I've been watching the ping returns from both services at the transmitter site. Yeah, it's a good thing we have two. Otherwise, they'd be off the air from time to time. But when you have two internets, you get a lot more reliability. Now, Matt, I've taken a bunch of time here to tell the story. Tell me your experience with dual path IP. It's fairly cheap. It's great insurance, at least in my experience. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. In this day and age where you cannot get point-to-point fiber or good reliable fiber internet services, which happens at a lot of sites, having dual paths, if your only option is cable or DSL over copper, which we all know how great a shape the copper infrastructure is in right now, you know, having a cellular backup is absolutely crucial. And I have to plug MaxConnect here because they prioritized LTE. is obviously you're in that upper tier of bandwidth, so you're guaranteed that bandwidth. We're on a general cellular connection. You're not necessarily guaranteed that bandwidth if it's, you know, if that tower happens to be busy. So, no, I absolutely, and I recommend backup cellular connections to stations that don't have the best primary connections in the first place. So 100% agree.
Yeah, having that static IP address, like through MaxConnect, is really important. What was going to... we know that having two IP connections, and maybe one of them is, you know, an IP link that you take care of. I've got a number of transmitter sites where we have direct, typically unlicensed Ubiquiti, although I do have one that is licensed. But it's still good to have a backup to that. I mean, lightning strikes, it knocks out an IP radio. It's good to have two of them. I guess one of the things I really like about IP technology is it's usually, not always, but it's usually kind of inexpensive. Whether it's hardware that you're buying, or whether it's a service that you're paying for, compared to, you know, what's at stake, it's reasonably inexpensive usually. So anyway, I just think there's a lot of benefit in designing systems that can use IP. Also, IP is, Josh was mentioning earlier, and not only is it good for audio, but if you've got RDS data or HD radio data, you put that Nautel multicast at the studio. Now you've got 100 kilobits per second of data, and that's all it takes to get your HDs on the air. So Matt, I'm sure you appreciate too the possibilities that you open up when your connections are some kind of IP connections.
Absolutely. It's funny you talk about the Ubiquiti. I've got a site where I couldn't get any kind of internet connection at that site. So I have another broadcast partner who were using internet at his site and using a Ubiquiti point-to-point unlicensed radio to extend internet from his cable modem out to that site. But then we're also using a cellular backup for that for the reasons you just discussed. You know, lightning, you know, wind knocks the dish out of alignment, lightning hits the site. You just, those Ubiquiti point-to-points are great. They're inexpensive, but they're definitely anything but foolproof. So you better have a backup plan if that's your primary mode of getting data out to your site.
So Matt, you were one of the first people that I talked at length with about putting radio processing, typically it's FM processing, onto essentially a PC platform. Now, if you look inside, most purpose-built audio processors these days, you'll find that they're built around an x86 architecture processor running in there, and they're running Linux or, you know, some kind of operating system. But how do you talk to people about running their FM processing in a generic computing platform, like a server of some kind or a desktop machine, or maybe one that you've built up specifically for that purpose? Are people uncomfortable with that? And do you have any techniques that you like to make sure you implement to make sure that that box boots up quickly and is as reliable as possible?
Yeah. So, you know, it depends on the person. Some people are comfortable with it. Some people aren't. I find that people that are more IT driven tend to be a lot more open, and because they fully understand that most modern processors in a box are running some form of Windows or Linux on an x86 platform. And furthermore, you step and think about every automation system, every single one that we run in radio runs on a computer. And we sit there and expect that machine to run 24/7. So yep. Why are we so afraid to put a computer at a transmitter site and expect it to run 24/7? And I think most people would say, well, but you're not attached to a big lightning rod at a studio. And that's true. So, you know, having good grounding obviously helps with that. And if your site's questionable, maybe you shouldn't do that. But if you've got a well-built site that's well-grounded, you get lightning hits and you don't have damage in your equipment, you can trust to, if you want to put a computer out there and run a sound card that can run the full composite spectrum, which the U192 coming out soon will be able to do that. And currently, the only option here in the States that doesn't require tilt correction that you can run is the AudioScience 5800 series cards, which I've got some sites running those. You know, that's obviously an option to do that at the computer at the tower site. But we also talked earlier about running it on a server back at the studio and just putting a simple MicroMPX decoder at the site, which that's even more simplistic. So there's kind of two different avenues you can take, and different applications apply differently. If in the case, I'm running both in my stations in Columbus, Ohio. I've got one site running just the MicroMPX. It's a smaller site. But then I've got two other sites running Stereo Tool on a PC with the AudioScience card currently, because I also have the automation backup at those sites as well, because the internet connection's kind of iffy at those sites. So I want to be able to have it fail over to local automation. So in that case, I want the full-blown processing at the site. So that's a case where MicroMPX doesn't make sense for me. But running Stereo Tool with an ASI card, I have no hesitation on doing that. And I'm running those into Nautel transmitters, digital MPX even. And the sites take lightning hits, and I've got well-grounded sites, and I don't have any issues. So I have found it to be very reliable in the right kind of sites. But like I said, it's not for every site and not for every customer.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You know, people are concerned about putting a processor or putting a computer at their site as their processor. Well, what's an importer?
That's true. Yeah.
What's an Omnia 9? I remember when the Omnia 9 first came out. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but there was a picture circulating on Facebook. Kirk, I guarantee you saw it. There was a picture circulating on Facebook where somebody got an Omnia 9 on demo, took the top off, took a picture of it, and just raised all kinds of hell about the hot glue on the video connector. It's an audio processor. Why do you care if there's hot glue on the video connector? They didn't want it to fall out. But that proved that the Omnia 9, which is probably one of the most popular processors sold today and has been for the last decade, is literally nothing more than an x86 CPU running in a fancy chassis.
Yep.
The stigma behind putting a processor on a computer out of a transmitter site in this day and age excuse me, seems misguided, because we've got so many things that solely are computers. That's all they are, whether they're running on ARM chips or x86 chips or whatever. Everything we're running. A Nautel transmitter is a computer with a bunch of amplifiers connected to it. So is a Gates transmitter.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense to be afraid of, oh, I can't process my audio with a computer out of the site. That's it's not going to be reliable. Sure it will.
It absolutely will.
So, yeah. Sorry.
The only advantage, here's what I'll say to that, kind of dovetailing on that, and this is where I say, you know, maybe it may not be for every single site. The one thing that those big box processors do that your ASI card in a standard computer is not going to have is there are surge suppression built in, specifically for if you take a lightning hit, where a normal sound card is not going to have that. So again, that's why I said if you have a well-grounded site that you don't have damage at, I mean, which I hope would be every site, but we know that that's not always the case. But especially if you've got HD, you got a lot of x86 stuff running on that HD equipment, you better have a well-grounded site, because anything that's going to blow up a potential computer running processing will absolutely blow up your importer or exporter. So it kind of all goes hand in hand. You know, that all goes back to that Jeff Walton tips and tricks on how to ground your sites properly.
Put your ferrites on the lines, guys. Put your ferrites on.
I think one thing that we as broadcast engineers can learn from an allied industry is the cell industry and how well-grounded. Not everyone. I know there's, you know, don't raise your hand and say, well, I've been to a site that wasn't grounded. They're up there, out there every week. Well, they shouldn't be. Most cell sites are very well grounded. You see the kind of work that they do, and you see the CAD welding that's typically done. And when you, well, for example, this transmitter site I put together in Oxford, Mississippi, my business partner, Larry Fuss, bought a used shelter, you know, the precast shelter. You go inside there and there's grounding everywhere. Everything is bonded. Everything is tied together. Even where two runs of conduit have a joint between them, there's a little, you know, grounding strap that runs across those. So we just grounded that building to the existing ground that the tower had. If you can get your FM site where there's already a cell site, you may be miles ahead, because they've probably got that thing grounded very, very well. And my point there is, yeah, we've got a lot of computers at that transmitter site. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 computers that are actually standalone computers. That doesn't even include the computer that's inside an Omnia 11, for example, or the computer that's inside the EAS box. So there are lots of computers. And I have a remotely accessible computer at every site that I run. Well, first of all, they're cheap. We take some old cast off computer, wipe it clean, you know, put a new Windows on it, and bam, you know, it sits out there forevermore. And now I can ping stuff. I can look at stuff. It's, you know, do more troubleshooting. So
I don't recommend a cast off computer for the processor. I will tell you that. Because let's say you do have a power failure. If you're going to use a computer for processing, you want to have a modern computer with a pretty fast SSD. Want to rip all the junkware out of there and get that thing to boot as fast as possible and get it optimized for that. Because obviously, if you do have a power outage, you want that thing to boot up pretty quickly. So don't use your cast off X office computer. That's no, don't do that.
Why are we still off the air? The computer's been sitting for 6 minutes.
No, you're right. I just use the cast off sales computers for remote access, not to do any processing. Right. In fact, before COVID hit, I built up a couple of redundant Dell servers with the Omnia 9S Enterprise processors in them to take to American Samoa. And just at first as a backup, but then I built two identical ones. So, you know, one's a backup automatically to the other. And we were going to send micro MPX to the transmitter site, because right now we're sending live wire out there. Anyway, COVID hit and I haven't been back since. So at some point we'll do that. But we got four processors running in each of these two Dell servers. Hey, we're going to meet Nick Lopez when we come back here in just a minute. I'm going to need help from Josh Bone, though. In just a minute, Josh, we're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about your sponsorship with Max Connect. But right now I'm going to tell you about Angry Audio. And what did I have in store for Angry Audio? Oh, yeah. The Guest Gizmo. Let's see, Suncast, you can pop the guest gizmo up there. I recently got to build these the studio in Oxford, Mississippi, and I needed headphones for the guests. Now, we don't very often have guests in there, but when we do, they want headphones. And I had never gotten to put one of these guest gizmos in, but I'd heard Catfish, Mike Dosh, the proprietor, the owner of Angry Audio, tell me, Kirk, these are so easy. You just drill a round hole and you put this square box in it. I said, what? Yeah. The top cover, the top plate of this thing covers up your round hole. So you drill a 2¾-inch round hole through your tabletop. Make sure you get it in the right place, because you know you don't get a chance to do that again. So got these holes where I wanted, drilled the 2¾-inch round hole, dropped the guest gizmo right in, and then used the little screws that come with it to hold it in place. And you know what? You never knew that there's a round hole sitting underneath it. Looks like a beautiful installation of this square looking guest gizmo. It is cool. It is slick. It is nice. I love it. And we even light up the little light there. You can make that push the talk, or you can make it turn your channel on and off, or you can use it as a mute button. There's several different ways to program the logic of that little light. But the headphones sound great. They're plenty loud. And I've got two of those. Plus I've got the headphone gizmo for the jock. The jock doesn't need that to be on the tabletop. It's underneath, but the guest gizmos are on top of the table so they can see it. Now, the guest gizmo is just one of many, many items that Angry Audio makes for your studios to make it super easy to build up your studios and make them look professional. I put both of these in probably in 18 minutes. It was not difficult at all. Oh, and I used, of course, the Studio Hub adapters to go from the RJ45 connection, that being at the end of my Cat 5, to the couple of quarter-inch tip ring sleeve connectors to take audio into the guest gizmos. That was quick to hook up, too. Love it, love it, love it. And I love putting that studio together with the help of Angry Audio. Check them out, angryaudio.com. is the website. All right, Josh Bone is here, and as the owner of Max Connect, Josh, I figured you might like to say something about Max Connect. Go, you got 60 seconds, my friend.
I heard about that Max Connect guy. He's a jerk.
That's what, you know, word on the street is that's true, but I'm here to dispel that for the most part.
For the most part. I love you too, Kirk. Kissy, kissy.
What do you want me to talk about? I'm horrible at self-promotion.
Well, actually, you know,
let Nick do the commercial. Nick, talk about your Max Connects. Tell them what you like so much.
I mean, everything that we all know about them. I mean, they're crazy reliable. The public IP address from anywhere makes supporting not only our transmitter sites, but we use them for every single remote that we do everywhere. We're using them now to broadcast NFL stuff with our Colts affiliation. They're just, it's, we've never had a problem. They just work. I love it.
There we go. They just work. They have a new router that we haven't even been talking about yet. We've got a new router called a CR202 that is, it's what everybody's always asked for. It's not a hotspot. It's actually a router that's got a 5,000 milliamp hour battery in it, and it charges with a 5-volt USB or USB-C connection. So you can charge it from your cell phone charger in the car. You can unplug it and run it for, what did John do? Like 6 hours?
Yeah.
Like six
hours.
As
soon as we got it, we unplugged it.
Yep. They ran a 4-station remote off of it for 6 hours. And it worked great. It has a Cat 6 modem in it. So it'll theoretically do 300 by 100. I think that's what Cat 6 does, something like that. Now, that's in like ultra ideal lab conditions. But yeah. The performance on it's been great. We just got them. We haven't even officially released them yet. This is the first time I'm talking about them publicly. We've already sold 20 of them. And everybody that's gotten them, the feedback that we've gotten on them is great, because it finally gives you portable, prioritized internet. And, you know, that is what probably the single most requested thing that we've been asked for, other than a user portal, which we also have now as well. So if you've got our Max Connect wireless service, where you get our Max Connect wireless service, you can log into your own customized or your own usage portal that will let you monitor your data usage. It'll give you daily alerts as to how much data you're using, whether you go over. You can get in and audit each one of your devices, things like that. So, you know, just another way that we're improving our wireless product to help support our customers. It's hard to talk about everything that the MaxConnect group offers now. We do, you know, integration, studio builds. That's one of the reasons why we're here, is talking to Nick and John about some studio upgrades here in Indianapolis for Radio One. We're about to install two transmitters for a group of stations in Florida. We've got a studio that we're going to be installing hopefully soon for a station up in Montana. We do stuff all over the place. We've got our line of products. The U192 is coming out. Suncast, can you bring up the U192 page on there and show people what that is? There it is right there, the U192 FBX sound card. We partnered with our friends at Angry Audio, and, you know, Catfish did a great job designing this. I had my hands on one yesterday on my way up here to Indianapolis. I stopped and visited the Angry Audio folks and actually got to touch one, and they should be shipping in the next couple of weeks. But it's the first USB sound card specifically designed to do composite. It's got BNCs on the back to output composite to your transmitter site.
And, wow.
You know, no one else has ever done this. You know, Matt said you can do composite with an ASI card, but you've got to have adapters. And the big thing about that that he mentioned is surge suppression. We've got surge suppression in that.
Oh, nice. So, nice.
50 SPL coming. You know, there are so many different things that we do. It's hard to talk about in 60 seconds. Heck, it's hard to talk about in 30 minutes. Nobody wants to listen to me ramble, so it's back to you, Kurt Barnett.
Well, the easy way to find out about all the things that he can't talk about in 60 seconds is to visit the website at maxconnect.com. I know it's spelled funny, MaxConnect. If you can't remember it, there's a link in the show notes for that. And thanks a lot, Josh, seriously, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm delighted to support your efforts because you support broadcasters so really, really well. So thanks a lot. Hey, we got a couple more things to talk about. Nick Lopez. Nick, it's good to meet you, but I don't know what you do. So tell me about your expertise and why you're on the set today.
I didn't know about this either until a few hours.
About 3 hours ago.
Yeah, sure. So no, I'm the...
I sprung it on them like you sprung it on me.
Yeah, we're at Lord Source. Oh, you're going to be on This Week in Radio Tech today, by the way. Am I?
Yes, you are.
So I'm the assistant chief engineer here at Radio 1 in Indianapolis. I'm from here, grew up here. I worked for a couple of different broadcasters, and I'm at Radio 1.
Nick does all the real work.
Okay.
And John was here, he'll admit that too.
And John records the videos for MaxConnect and takes the credit, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He tells everyone that.
Oh. Hey, Nick, actually, when I was a kid, I spent summers in Indianapolis. My grandfather and grandmother lived there, and we spent time at the parsonage at I think it was 6400 East 46th Street is where my grandfather lived. That number just sticks in my head. And so I would take the opportunity to get on the riding mower and mow the grass there at the church parsonage. How about that?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. No, I love it here. It's where I grew up and it's where I plan to stay. So I'm glad that you have fond memories as well.
Yep, I sure do. We had a lot of fun there. Been to the Speedway a couple times, and then the rest of the grandparents lived down in around Mooresville, so a little bit southeast of town. So I spent a lot of time out there too. Yeah. All right. We got a few more minutes, and let's see. Boy, what Josh? I wonder what else we wanted to hit on here. We've talked about, you know, getting comfortable with technology, moving to it. What maybe, Josh? I could ask you what. What do you find? I know you do, you know, contract work, you do jobs, you do projects. What do you find? What are station owners or what are engineers telling you that, look, I don't have time to do this. I know it needs to get done right. You do it, Josh. What are people wanting to upgrade these days? Any common thread?
Well, what engineers want to upgrade and what owners want to upgrade are usually very, very different things. So,
yeah.
I mean, what are they wanting to upgrade? Owners like to upgrade things that look flashy, that people will notice, that advertisers will notice. Sound, processing has always been a huge upgrade thing. I mean, as far as having, making sure that your on-air sound is better than the next guy's, and better can mean different things to different people. You know, sometimes louder is better. Sometimes cleaner. Sometimes they want all of the above. I've talked to other stations that are like, we don't care that we're the lowest station or the quietest station on the dial because we're the cleanest. It's just kind of a thing there. Nobody ever really wants to update transmitters because they're expensive. I mean, that's just the long and the short of it. It's expensive to upgrade a transmitter. Same thing with consoles. It's, you know, it's time to do it. You mentioned earlier, we were talking yesterday about a station that I visited a while back that is still running a 50-year-old console. And I don't know how. I mean, the parts haven't been available for it in at least 30 years. And, you know, they got it as part of a package along with the 50-year-old transmitter that they still have as a backup. And I'm like, how is this stuff still working? And, you know, those are the things that, you know, I understand that, you know, everybody wants to squeeze every penny of life out of their product, but you're doing yourself a disservice by not upgrading these things. Because when that console dies, buddy, it's going to die. there will be no resurrecting that. And, it, you know, something in that will fail that is completely unavailable. You know, yeah, caps fail. You can always change caps and, you know, oh, this needs to be re-chipped or whatever. But that thing doesn't even have chips. It has transistors. So that's the same thing with that transmitter. The transmitter, you know, it's from the mid-70s. The stuff that's in it, you can't get anymore. There are just, everything has a finite lifespan. As much as we might not want it to, and you can kick the can down the road for a long time, but everything has a finite lifespan, and sooner or later, you're going to have to replace it with something better. Better doesn't always mean new. I have another client that we take care of. Great guy. And like every other owner, a small radio owner, you know, cash flow's tight. So he needed to replace three transmitters. He wasn't able to afford to replace those three transmitters. So we found him three used solid state transmitters. They're older. They're probably 10 years old, something like that. But he got a heck of a deal on them. And that's better than his 30-year-old tube transmitters. Going to save him money on power, going to save him money on air conditioning. Yeah, they're starting to get a little harder to support, but they're a whole lot better than 30-year-old tube rigs that you can't get the controllers for anymore. Because when that controller and that thing blows up, you've got a boat anchor, a really expensive, very large boat anchor. So as far as wanting to upgrade, it's hard to nail down any specific things that people want to upgrade. Program directors like to update processing. That's probably the most common large ticket item that people want to upgrade is their processing. And there was one place that I walked into that it made me laugh so hard because they were running, and this was 5 years ago, they were running a Collins FM transmitter. You remember Collins, Kirk?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
You remember when Collins sold to Continental?
I'm not that old, but okay. I'll take your word. They sold.
They were running a Collins FM transmitter with the original Collins, 310Z exciter?
Oh my gosh. I remember that.
They had an Omnia 9.
Oh, that didn't work out well, did it?
Classic.
And it's just, that was like, I just kind of walked in and stood there and looked at it for a second and said, okay, I'm good. Turn around, walk back out. Because I've never seen anything like that. You've got this $15,000, you know, on-air processor that's brand new, fully decked out, had the RDS and everything, and you're shoving it into a 50-year-old, 50-plus-year-old transmitter. Mm-hmm. Why? And that's the thing I didn't get. So, yeah, when it comes down to what do people like to upgrade, they like to upgrade processing. because this guy really didn't want to buy a new transmitter, but he sure dropped 15 grand on a processor.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And not knowing that the technology in that exciter probably couldn't at all properly handle what the audio processor could do, or what any modern audio processor could do, but maybe especially the Omnia 9, the frequency modulation oscillator, the components in there, the design of the circuitry just wasn't designed to handle what a modern processor could do. Hey, we're going to have a final word with Josh, Matt, and Nick coming up in just a minute. Got a quick final thing. Here's something that your jocks will love you for if you put this in the control room. It's Vox Pro. We'll be right back.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's Vox Pro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why Vox Pro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in Vox Pro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller nine to him saying, I'm ready.
Five. Ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff. Hit delete. It goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller nine.
I'm ready, St. John.
So one of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about Vox Pro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, this was fun, Jury Duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. Vox Pro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about Vox Pro, and you will be glad you did.
Innocent or guilty? I don't know. Get your Vox Pro from Broadcasters General Store. The website, bgs.cc, and they love to talk to you on the phone. They're kind of built around taking phone call orders and helping you decide exactly what you need and giving you the shipping time and the best price possible. Call them at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Thanks a lot to BGS, Broadcasters General Store, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I've had a lot of fun here over the last hour with Josh and Matt and Nick. We're going to go back to their studio one more time. Would any of you like to leave us with a tip of the week, a little word of wisdom, maybe something that engineers ought to think about for the week ahead, or is just put in their back pocket or put in their pipe and smoke it, as they say?
Or anything, We'll start with Nick, because I don't have one.
Of course. Yeah. Be ready for anything. Yeah.
Legitimately. I mean, that's what it comes down to is, ultimately, be ready for anything.
Yeah. I mean, anymore we're being pulled in so many different directions. I don't think it's new, but I mean, we kind of have to know how to do pretty much every other department's job in order to help them with it. So yeah, just being ready for looking at events coming up, for helping out the marketing department or the sales department, will make you invaluable to the team.
Yep. Matt Levin, got a tip of the week for us?
I this is always kind of the drum I beat from the processing aspect, but the air chain. The best processor in the world can't help a broken air chain. So reduce the number of A to D, D to A's, reduce SRCs. Your goal is to get the native sample. If you're Wheatstone's plant 40-for-1, you should be 40-for-1 all the way through to the processor. If you're XCA, you should be 48 all the way to the processor. And so your entire air chain, no SRCs, no A to D's, no D to A's.
I like to say the same ones and zeros that came off the hard drive should show up at the input to the processor, if there's any way to get that done.
Exactly.
Josh Bone, how about you? Got a word of wisdom to leave us with?
Don't ignore your infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest thing that I can say to anybody, engineers, owners, managers, whatever. Don't ignore your infrastructure. That doesn't mean you have to spend, hundreds of thousands of dollars every year changing things out. But your radio station is where you make your money. And if it's not performing at its peak, if its audio quality is bad, if your transmitter's not at full power, why? Well, let's look at that. Is, you know, do you have problems in your wiring? Are you using 50-year-old equipment or older? Are your air conditioners, your transmitters like failing? Because nobody's been there in 3 months. If you ignore your infrastructure, you will go off the air, and off the air equals lost revenue. And that's, I mean, that's the way I was brought up. I don't know about you guys, but yep. The whole point of this is to not lose revenue. And it can be as simple as just sending somebody to a transmitter site, you know, twice a month to check the filters on the air conditioner and take the readings on the transmitter. Keep the grass cut. Make sure your tower lights work. You know, lost revenue is bad, but getting fined by the FCC or the FAA because your tower lights are out and you didn't tell anybody, or God forbid a small plane, your tower and bring it down or something dies. I mean, again, don't ignore your infrastructure. That's the bottom line in all of this.
And hey, to dovetail that, when you're off the air, you lose about 98.2% of your audience or more.
I mean, some watts is better than no watts. That's a Paul Burdism. Some watts is better than no watts.
And we have a show title. Some watts is better than no watts. All right. Hey, we gotta go right. we gotta go right now. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. Josh Bone, Matt Levin, Nick Lopez, also John Takak, who was here at the beginning of the show. Appreciate you guys so much. Big thanks to Suncast, who really does a great job engineering our show. Thanks to him for manning the controls. I really appreciate you, Suncast. And thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find other cool podcasts. I'm Kirk Harnack. We'll be back next week for another episode. Oh, by the way, next week, guess who's here? It's Jeff Welton. Oh, that's coming up next week. We'll see you then on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.